Don't get lost in the waves of change.
190 pages, tens of hours of lawyers. One takeaway today is you now put on your listing agent hat when you meet with a buyer and you treat him the same way. So that's what you need to take away.
KGCI Real Estate on Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
It's a consultation and a strategy. When you think of how people need to buy a home in this market, it takes great strategy. So why not strategize with that buyer? They need your help more than ever.
Depend on KGCI Real Estate on Air.
What's up, everyone? This is Niyi Adewale, host of the Acaba Home Financial Freedom Mastermind Group. This group meets virtually every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, and the members of this group are committed to achieving financial freedom well before the traditional retirement age. So in this podcast, you are going to get VIP access to the conversations we have about different forms of investment and creative ways to get your dollars working harder for you than you originally worked to obtain those dollars. I'm so happy to be joined by Monica Dunlap, who is a real estate investor and realtor based out of Louisville, Kentucky. And more importantly, this is actually my personal investor-friendly realtor that has helped me purchase 20 plus units in Louisville and sell over 15 units over the last 5 years. And the cool thing about Monica is she's been able to make the jump from working for a Fortune 1000 company to full-time real estate and build up a team that's crushing it out in Louisville. And I'm still learning new things each day. So I'm genuinely interested and happy to have you on the podcast. Monica, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that I learned about a year ago, right, into like 4 years into our relationship, and I probably should have asked before, is that you are Australian. All right. I know this is a complete side note, but this kind of threw me off. Where is your family fully from? And when did you end up in Louisville, Kentucky?
So my mom's Australian. I'm technically American, but when I was three, moved to Australia, lived there for about 7 years, came back, born and raised in Buffalo, New York. So I'm familiar with a little bit of the north and the cold, but migrated to Louisville right after 1 year of college. Ex-boyfriend, best mistake I ever made. Love Louisville, love everything about Louisville, and been here for almost 20 years now.
That's awesome.
So, gives you my age a little bit too, but all good.
Hey, come on now. That is awesome. That is awesome. And I definitely want to dive into some of the aspects of Louisville a little bit later. But the first piece that we talk about on this group a lot is individuals trying to make the transition from full-time work into the real estate, which is our passion. And you actually had a very successful career. You were moving up. I believe you made it to district manager level within your company. You were managing multiple employees. Can you talk us through kind of how you excelled in the corporate world and what made you want to move into the 1099 world?
Yep. So just to answer the chat too, I did a year at UB. So did 1 year and then took a year off to become a resident, because as a resident, you make it's a lot less money for college, and then went to U of L for 4 years. I had to actually get a business degree. So I always wanted to, everyone told me, hey, Monica, you're smart, be a doctor. So I just thought I'm going to go to school and be a doctor. However, right at high school, McDonald's was offering a great wage of like $7.25 an hour. And that was exciting for me. So I worked my way up to McDonald's. McDonald's would actually pay for your school if you did business. So when I went to U of L, I was taking all the gen ed courses because I was stuck on going into, you know, the medical field. Well, lo and behold, I had to make a decision because McDonald's wouldn't pay for my school if I didn't take business. So I either had to switch to business or I had to keep, you know, tell them, you know, keep down the medical route. I found out I don't like dissecting things. So I went right into business, loved what I did. I was a manager, general manager with McDonald's, graduated with a bachelor's degree of science in business, which is a great decision, by the way. I mean, glad that kind of McDonald's put me in that route. Once I graduated, made that jump to Cracker Barrel as a general manager and worked for Cracker Barrel for 9 years, working up the ladder, ended at a district manager. So I was managing over every store, had over 100 employees. I had 7 stores managing that. And it just, at that time, Nee, I had two young boys. I had a newborn baby and a three-year-old, and I just couldn't do the corporate world anymore. I was working, you know, it's not a fun life when you have to, you get to work at 8 or 9 in the morning, you're not getting home till 8 or 9 at night. And I never got to see my children. So finally, I was to a point where I said, you know what, to my husband, I said, I am quitting Cracker Barrel with or without your permission. I said, but give me a year and I will make up for the income. So he wasn't very happy about that. And I'm glad I had his support, though. I did have his support. It was a tough year financially. Really was. I think we probably had $60,000, $70,000 on credit card debt. Use the credit cards go up. However, and that was in 2017. So I think that's when we met, actually, very early in 2017. I was a go-getter and I wasn't going to allow anything to get in the way to stop me from making up that income. Finally, in 2020, my husband, George, he was working the Cracker Barrel. He was district manager at the time for Cracker Barrel. And they were about ready to send him to Tennessee and send him to all over the country. And I said, this is your sign. We've got enough financially. Why don't you quit Cracker Barrel and come on? And he came on and said, I don't know what you're going to do. We thought about being a realtor. He does a lot of investments with me. So he actually ended up in lending. So he's now a lender. He's been doing that for a couple of years now. And it's been great.
Monica, that is incredible, right? Just the journey that you were able to go on and the journey and the decision that you made that no matter what, you're going to bet on yourself and get out there and get it. And that's what drew me to you when we had our first meeting and I talked about some of my goals and I was a new investor. I was like, hey, you know, I want to have big dreams. I want to build up, you know, this many units, but you believed in that and you went out there and made it happen. We were looking at constant deals. You know, I moved to Boston during that year and I was like, hey, can we check this out? Check that out. You were sending videos and lo and behold, fast forward 5 years, we built up something pretty special both ways. And it's been an incredible journey to watch. And you are actually a major inspiration for why I wanted to move out of the W-2 into full-time real estate, because watching your journey and seeing how you hustled to make it to where you are right now, where you've got teams of just, and we're going to get into this. I don't want to spoil it, but we're going to get into that a little bit later. It's truly incredible. And so I want to take us back to that 2017 when you did that shift. And you had to start going out there and really hustling and kind of building up to try to replace that income. What did that year look like for you? You mentioned the credit card debt. You mentioned trying to get out there and really get after it and build up a whole new business. What was that year like for you?
Well, during that year too, we had purchased Brook Street, which is an old Louisville. And people aren't familiar, old Louisville is their Victorian home section. And they've turned a lot of those old Victorian homes into duplexes, you know, triplexes, quadplex. So they're great investment opportunities. Well, we actually had purchased the year before, or maybe a couple of years, a threeplex for $105,000, but needed complete gutting renovation. It was not a great property, and I can get into that too. And the whole, you learn a lot when you're doing a complete rehab in a historic district where we didn't know this at the time, but you do need to make sure that you get permission from the historic preservation about the repairs and putting the right windows in and things like that. So it was quite the journey. And that's what racked up a lot of the debt as well, doing that project. But to get back to your question, it wasn't easy. I mean, I just remember even meeting you. I had to email you and stay on to try and get you as a client and show my value and show my worth. And I tell people this all the time, getting into real estate, you have to work it every day. You cannot sit and wait for the phone to ring. If you're sitting and waiting for the phone to ring, you're not going to get the business you want. And honestly, being in real estate has enabled me to find the deals that I currently have. I mean, right now I have two flips going up and purchasing another renovation, another property I'm closing on next week, just from being in real estate and offering my clients a solution versus going on the market. So, but you have to be able to hustle. And I tell people all the time, I told my team today, so I'm an introvert. I am a true introvert where I would rather sit at home and read a book by myself than go out there. But I had to, and they're like, no, you're not, Monica. I don't believe it. I said, no, but I have to be extroverted. in this business. And I met my good buddy, Chuck, that works for me. He's been with me for 3 years now at the park, because I went out and I talked to everybody I could about real estate. And that's what it takes. You've got to go out there. Anyone at Starbucks, or when you go into a restaurant, or when you're in the grocery store, you strike up conversations to find out. And it's up at the root of it is how can you help them? I'm not here. It's not about the dollar sign. It's how can I help you achieve your dreams? If you want to be a homeowner, if you want to be an investor, how can I help you do that?
I love it. I love it. And the key nugget too there is that hard work and that hustle each day, right? You can't take a day off. If you want to be recognized in this industry, it's not sitting by the phone. It's completely different when you move into that 1099 world, whether it's real estate or any other type of 1099 world. You really got to be ready to go out there and put in the effort and work, but it can grow pretty quickly and turn into a business. And I want to dive into that in a second. But first, you mentioned that you were investing and working on that Brook Street property. I remember that one vividly, and the end product was beautiful. I know there was a lot of pain and heartache to get it to that point, but I was like, man, if Monica ever lists this, I'm buying it. But to that point, when did you actually start investing in real estate? And was it before you got your license that you started investing?
So I did the Robert Kiyosaki. I mean, that was a great thing when I was young, when I first moved to Louisville. I did that, and I always wanted to, that's what got me interested in properties. So you can't do this now. But when I was at U of L and I was able to get McDonald's, my school paid for, I took a student loan and I purchased a duplex up in Buffalo, New York. So that was my first investment property. And I was able to get it, use that money. Again, the 2008 lending thing kind of stopped that. So you can't do things like that now. But I was able to do that. So I still have that property to this day. And it yields a great investment. I've had the same tenant in there for 12 or 13 years at this point in time. So it was before I got into real estate. And that's what kind of also was a natural shift to go from the corporate world to real estate, because I invested in it already and had, you know, a little understanding, not as much as I do today. I wish I knew what I knew. But so it was that one. And then I got in, then it was really, I got Veronica Drive, which I bought that for $50,000, three bed, one bath, single family. And then I went and I got the Brook Street property. My mom was real estate, and she is a real estate agent. So my mom was my inspiration of getting into real estate. She's the one that helped me find those properties. It was just $105,000. It was kind of a weird, like the first floor was a two bed. The third floor was a one bed, but the second floor was three different. It was three different kind of mini apartments with one shared bathroom. And you can only imagine what kind of tenants that attracts. So we just had to get everybody out, and we had to completely gut the whole thing.
Wow. Was,
and wow. Then, $3,000 a month in rents, and the mortgage is $1,100.
Hey, I will take that all day, but the work that you put in is what made that happen. And I love the creativity, using whatever is available to you at that time to get started in investing. So the 08 lending is not available, but there's other things that have come up, right? Like last year, 15% DSCR loans, right? Where they're looking at debt service ratio, not looking at you. Okay, we can use that. And before last year, the vacation loans, where they kept the same rate as, you know, your primary house. Now that's changed, but you've got to continue adapting if you want to get into this real estate investing. And one thing I love and has been amazing for me as well as your other clients is the fact that you invest yourself. I can't tell the audience how many times I shoot you a text. I'm like, hey, Monica, I got this going on. I need a contractor. I need somebody. And you're like, hey, use this person. I got him working over here. I think a couple of times we actually called the same person at the same time. He's like, hey, man, I'm talking to Monica right now. So, so that's a true benefit of working with an investor-friendly realtor. And I got to say, the numbers that you mentioned in Louisville, I saw a lot of eyes start to perk up. That's one of the reasons that I continue to invest down there, is that the cash flow numbers still work for long-term rentals, and there's still a lot of value add there. Do you mind just diving a little bit into the Louisville market in general and talking about kind of what you're helping clients do out there?
Yeah. So the average price point in Louisville is still around the 250 price point. So, but you can definitely, depending on area, and I appreciate Nee too, who sends a lot of great referrals. What I've known with Louisville is we You know how the real estate market gets its ups and downs, and you see the huge swings in the New Yorks and the Californias. In Louisville, it's almost like a mini shield where, yes, you get right now, yes, the market has shifted a little bit. We're not seeing the craziness, which is overall a good thing than it was 6 months ago, because that wasn't sustainable. So I'm excited about the market that we're going into, because it's a great opportunity for investors. So it is a great market. So if you want to buy a duplex for $150,000, you definitely can, and get good tenants and have a great investment property. So it's a great market for that. And just something to talk about too, Nee, when you're talking about creative financing. I mean, one of my rental properties in Bardstown, Kentucky, and I moved out there for Cracker Barrel years ago for one of the positions. And I had a great lender that was able to say, okay, it takes 50 miles or so to get there, so you can actually have this as another single fam as a primary residence. So I was able to put 3.5% down. So as you're starting, you can definitely get creative, and depending on distance and how far things are, and that's still to this day, because by the distance, I was able to get that 3.5% down. So I bought that. It was a foreclosure property for $70,000, and now it's worth about
$200,000. Nice.
A month in rent.
Hey, well, we can't beat that. And I love just the diversification of markets, right? Because you talk about the coastal markets, and those are going to have those high swings, but they tend to appreciate quicker. But it's also good to be in markets like Louisville, where it's growing at a steady pace. There's not that crazy swing, and you can depend on that cash flow month over month as the property continues to grow in value and you pay down the debt and things of that nature. It's good to be in both, right? I love being and getting exposure to both types of markets. And kind of swinging back to your story, right? We mentioned the struggle of 2017, but you were able to force your way through that, get to 2018, 2019, 2020, and really start to accelerate and build a whole team that's now the Totally About Houses team, which is, I mean, you got a lot going on there, but do you mind walking through kind of that journey from, say, 2018 through 2020?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I've always wanted to, I was always been in leadership positions. So I love being in leadership. I didn't want to be a single agent. So getting into it, I wanted to be on a team. So actually a year into it, I started creating my own team and figure out how do I get the businesses to sustain, to help others. So, because I'm not going to run a team and not be able to give business to the agents either. And yes, they have to get it for themselves. But that's how it started, and just growing it. I mean, right now we're actually transitioning from the Totally About Houses team to Totally About Houses brokerage. So that's our next step. And again, the only reason why I did that was more to save the agents money. So I've got a great for it, systems in place. But that's the biggest thing. You have to have your systems in place, whether it's, you know, being renting or, you know, doing that side, or being a real estate agent. I mean, either way, you've got to have good systems in place. And it takes a little bit to invest in some systems, but make sure you use them. And that's the biggest thing. So I do now have 11 full-time agents plus 6 admin staff on the team. And of those 6 admin staff, 4 of them are actually also licensed realtors as well. So we have a great team. We sell about 200 homes a year. And it's $50 million in sales based on our average price point around that 270 price point. But we're consistently 200. I want to go to number one next year and sell 422. So I have that mindset of, you know, if you got to build it. So in order to do 422, I've got to have the agents that want to do the business to do 422. And I've got to have the systems in place to support them for 422. So I have the team in place to support them. I'm recruiting agents that want to make money and want to be successful. And we're also trying to, if something else on the side for the brokerage and any ideas, I'd love to have. But as part of our value proposition, we want to be able to have the agents that want to invest maybe 5 or 10% or whatever of their commission to go towards investing in properties. So we're working on that with an attorney right now for the legal parts of it, of what does that look like? So,
Monica, two things. One, that was a highly specific number. It wasn't like, hey, 400 something, 422. I have no doubt with that in mind that you're going to hit that here soon. And two, I love the portion of getting the team involved. That, like, one of the things within this industry that many people that are not in it may not know is realtors tend to jump from brokerage to brokerage to brokerage. And there's not a whole lot of quote unquote loyalty from that standpoint. But when you start to offer incentives like, hey, working with this brokerage, you're actually going to have the opportunity to potentially invest in real estate, right? Where, you know, in the past, it may have taken you a couple of years to build up the capital, and then you got to get over the mindset. Now you can work with individuals that have been investing for years that know what they're doing and be able to kind of get a piece of that. That's incredible. It's innovative. And I love that thinking.
Yeah. And one thing on the side too, if anyone is thinking about they're making that shift to a 1099, running their own business, or even with your investments, I highly recommend, and Nee, maybe you say this all the time, profit first. The Profit First book is a great book that's going to help you allocate. Let me allocate so much towards profit every month, and then allocate so much towards taxes. So you're not stuck at the end of the year owing a bunch of taxes, which that's everyone's worst nightmare. And I see it all the time with that 1099 or even, you know, I mean, that's your big thing. And then Profit First says you allocate that money first into an account. So I use that money to purchase my investment properties now. So I always have a pool of money and I know what to invest because I take it out of my business first, as opposed to trying to leave and whatever's left at the end. And if you run your business that way, you always put you allocate that to the side. You always have some left over versus being stuck. And I have no money left over, so I have nothing to invest with. Does that make sense, Nee?
Absolutely.
And I mean, I pay my taxes yearly. I don't do the quarter like a lot of 1099s because I allocate it. However, sometimes I use my tax money to do an investment and get it back and make sure it goes back into the tax account. But that's another thing to do some flips. But
no, and that's incredible advice. Highly recommend. Please take notes, everybody listening. Profit first. I do the same thing. I do it both in my personal life as well as in the different businesses. And it definitely helps when the tax man comes around, because sometimes you get hit over the head and it's like, man, it's a little bit expensive, but you always have it allocated. So it's like, okay, I feel okay about this. Much better than if I was trying to pull it from other places, right? So great advice. And before we open it up to the group, right, for questions from those that join live, I just want to ask two more. One, what is one of the goals? You mentioned the 422, right? But what is one of the goals that you have for next year that our audience that's listening on the line right now and will listen in the future can help you with in 2023?
Honestly, one of my goals personally is always to invest in every quarter a new property. So that's going to help me build it over, you know, allocate. So before I did the 1099, I would get quarterly bonuses. So those bonuses would go towards property. I mean, you've got to figure out how to make that happen. So that is a personal goal for that part of it. But my biggest thing is building that brokerage and helping others become, you know, not just real estate agent, but real estate investors. So that is a big goal for me next year. But I already gave you. Well, I mean, the 422, and of course, we have a big project going on too, Nee.
Hey, come on now. We do. And that's important too. I was hoping you're going to say that goal, but no, that's a combined goal.
You had to share, you know?
That's a shared goal. That's fine. And the last question from me is, what do you like to do for fun, Monica? And this is a selfish question because I have you here and it took forever. Let me tell everybody on live that it took 4 months to get my realtor on this podcast. I'm like, come on, Monica, you got to join this thing. But what? It's because she's been busy helping so many people get their dreams started. So I appreciate it. I get it. But what do you like to do for fun?
Well, beach volleyball. So I play beach volleyball two nights a week. That's kind of like my out. Love it. It's a co-ed league. I mean, you can go from a D league to a C league. You don't have to be great. It's just a lot of fun and good exercise. So that's really it. I've got three little boys, 4, 6, and my oldest just turned 9. So I spend a lot of time at night with them. I love to cook. So I was just making them dinner. You know, had to julienne some carrots, and I get all fancy. So I'm a chef as well. Love to do that. So that's they take up when I'm not working. I'm with my family and spending time with my family. So or beach volleyball.
Come on now. That is awesome, Monica. I truly appreciate you joining. Seriously, thank you so much. I know there's a lot going on, but I'm so excited for the brokerage to get going and for these new agents just to see kind of the benefits that you're going to bring from a knowledge perspective, benefits perspective, and innovation. And so I want to go ahead and open it up to the group. And this is going to cut at some point, but we'll jump back on. So anybody, if you have a question for Monica, and I saw a couple come through the chat, feel free to unmute and ask your question.
Hey, Monica. Thanks for joining. This is great hearing your story and, you know, all the advice. One of the questions I have, and something that Nee mentioned in the email that he sent out. So I know you helped him acquire, I think, 20 plus units and sell 15 and kind of scale up in that way. And I'm curious to know, is that maybe the best way to kind of scale up, especially that fast? I mean, to me, over 5 years, that seems pretty quick to get to 20 plus. And maybe Nee, you could speak to this too. Maybe this is a question for you as well. But, you know, is that maybe the best way to, you know, kind of reach that scale in that you, you know, are selling previous units that you bought, maybe using a 1031 and then kind of, you know, trading houses for hotels with the monopoly analogy. But yeah, so, you know, I'm kind of curious looking over the next year. I just bought a 4 unit and I'm trying to be bullish, you know, with my purchases, and over the next year, you know, maybe look to purchase another property. And I'm curious to know, what are some ways to, you know, hit that sort of scale as you progress?
Now that's a great question. I think Nee can also help with that. Congrats, first of all, on the fourplex. That's exciting. And so it all depends, right? That is a great way to do it, as long as the building appreciates and you have the equity built in. Because if it doesn't appreciate, if you're not able to get it out, it doesn't make sense, right? You're just getting the same money that you got out. Nee was able to, with the great market, be able to appreciate it quite a bit. So he was able to take that to do the 1031 or other things he needed to do. And he can talk to that as well. So it depends on what your thing is. Like for me, for example, I don't have any plan to sell any properties that I have. I have right now 20 rental properties. However, this is where, like, what Nee and I are doing is leverage. We're two people coming together where we purchase commercial land. So, and then I've built relationships with the banks. So that's a really big thing that, I mean, I use the People's Bank. I was using River City. So now when I go to the People's Bank, I think I have right now 8 or 9, and it's not under my personal name. It's under my LLC. So that helps too, because I'm actually refinancing another home to pull out equity that with a regular bank, and they don't even ask about this other bank because it's with an LLC, right? So I've built this relationship with the bank where they just say, send me an updated personal financial statement. They don't ask for bank account information. They don't ask for bank statements. They don't ask for anything. Where it's a small local bank. So I really say, get in with a small local bank and build a relationship with them. They know I pay. There's no issues with that. Again, it's a spreadsheet I send them. It's just a personal financial statement, which you should have anyway, so you know where you're at. And I'm happy to share a blank personal financial statement spreadsheet for everybody in case, you know, you want to see what that looks like, where it lays out your assets and liabilities, and you can see how much you have in net worth, right? That's what they want to see. So, but what I'm saying with that, we've now gone to with that bank for this project, and there's almost like no questions asked. So that's the benefit of where you can scale up when you build relationships with the bank. So I don't need to sell or put much more. Now, yes, we need to get 20% down, and that's how do you come up with the 20%? So if I had to sell something to come up with it, I absolutely would. But if, because I don't, with the position I'm in with the business I run, I don't have to do that. But then bringing in a partner, so Nee and I work together to, you know, just we get leverage. Does that make sense? So
yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay, cool. Thanks. And yeah, I'd love to get that personal finance statement if you're going to share that out. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'll share it out, and it'll be a blank one because it's just a lot of the local banks I'll ask for, and it's good to see. And I was able to see, like, my cousin always asked me, because my sister's telling me, well, get him into real estate, he needs to do something. And I like to joke around with him, well, I know my net worth, you know, it's this, I'm not going to go into it, but, you know, But the financial statement, knowing your numbers is so important in any business. If you want to run a successful business, you have to know your numbers.
And gotcha. Piggybacking off of Monica, right? It's really buying well and getting really good at a niche, right? So the whole time I was investing in Louisville at Monica, we were going after small multifamily, and then we jumped up to a 12-plex, right? And it was like, okay. And you get so good at that niche that you know exactly what's needed for each of the units. Hey, this is the type of tenant that's going to be renting this area. And Monica mentioned it earlier, that old Louisville area where it's like historic. Funny enough, that's right where I was buying. So I bought all within a mile of each other. You can walk to it. Like I used to actually enjoy walking down the street and just, hey, this is the house. That's the house. That's the other one. There goes the next one. And so it's really just niching down and continuing to get really good at the purchase you just made and trying to leverage up on the knowledge that you're gaining, because then you can move a little quicker. And now, to Monica's point, we've partnered up and we're going to be building that 105 townhome unit that I mentioned earlier, right, in Louisville. And we're working through that process, which is a whole nother step for both of us. But we've built up enough contacts to pull this together and built up enough of a reputation that it's a step that we're ready to take. So that's the only other piece I would add.
Hey, I wanted to ask a quick question. So I recently bought my first property, and I wanted you to kind of go back to 2017 where you're kind of working on that rehab and you ran into some debt. So me personally, I got this property. I had about 2 floods in about 3 months. I'm starting to build up some debt and trying to deal with that process of just trying to move forward. I wanted to ask, what was your mindset and how did you kind of get through that first year when things were kind of struggling?
I kept, and I didn't go into this before, and it was tough, but I kept it. I'm going to do this. I had that drive of, and like I told, I'm very competitive. So like I told my husband, give me a year. And that was probably one of the toughest years in my marriage and in my life, because in the first part of that 2017, every opportunity he could get, he'd be like, you can go to Cracker Barrel. You go back to Cracker Barrel. Said, no, I'm not going to Cracker Barrel. I am going to make this happen. So I did anything I could to lead generate, to get deals, and in the middle. And again, he did help with the whole rehab. But we had to fire contractors with that too. I remember driving back and going in there, and the contractors were, not doing what they were supposed to be doing. So we had to do a big shift in contractors and everything. And at the end of the day, I knew that if we get this right, yes, I'm depending on credit card debt right now. If we get it right, I can refinance this out and rent it. I knew where my rent rates were going to be. I knew what the value was going to be. And that's what actually got us out of that debt, is refinancing that property, be able to pull that all out, pay off all the debt, and then get it fully rented. So now that we make that profit every month. So does that answer the question? It's sometimes you do. You take risk, but take smart risks. If you're going to put it on credit card, don't do it because you're ordering all this fancy food at a restaurant, right? Do it to build something and then know that you're going to be able to refinance it and be able to get it out.
And Elvin, I know you had a couple comments. Did you want to ask those questions?
Sorry. No, my comments, you guys kept talking about having to pay a bunch of taxes. I'm like, COSIG was going through my head. I'm like, get into one of my multifamily deals. So I was just making a little side comment there. No, nothing to add a lot of value right now.
No, that podcast are just fantastic. The one they just did on that and saving yourself in taxes, there's some gold in that. There really is.
I got a question for you guys. Me and Monica, kind of goes to both of you. So with like the talks and the impending recession that's probably coming down the pipe here in the next year to 2 years, do you adjust your strategy to facilitate how the money flows, whether that's like debt or otherwise, or do you adjust your strategy kind of based on your plan and then have very strict underwriting in order to execute on that plan?
So for me, I've always run a P&L very tightly. I don't waste money on things. I've always analyzed. That's just a part of who I am. So, and I always believe in any, market, the people that work hard and have a good plan and strategy are going to be successful. And the one that just willy-nilly waste their money unfortunately are not. So even with real estate, this is going to be for the real estate agents, the ones that don't take it seriously and don't run it like a business, they're the ones who are going to get out. And the ones that do are going to rise to the top. And that's what I believe. So I live it no matter what market, I live it the same. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And piggybacking off of Monica, I would agree. I think you've got to be tight with your numbers and understand what your goal is. For example, if you're looking to buy a house, right? Why not look at a house hack? Why not look at something that's going to lower your cost of living on a monthly basis and allow you to, when you move out, be able to rent out two portions of the house and make it cash flow even more? Why not buy properties that are going to make sense from a numbers perspective right now and only get better once the market turns back around down the road? And so, hey, Monica, I told you that was going to happen. I told you that was going to happen. We don't have the paid for Zoom yet, but we're working on it.
And they like be like me and then don't even pay for Zoom and save yourself $13 a month.
Hey, what? Well, hey, this is a perfect example, right?
Exactly. Why? No, but it is, because every little bit that it adds up, and a lot of people don't get that. And I mean, this, it doesn't matter if it's $10 a month, like me doesn't want to spend $10 a month on Zoom, right? But that is something that saves money.
And guys, this is what I get every time I call Monica. She's picking at me. She's saying I don't want to spend the $10 for the paid for Zoom. We're working on it. All right, we're working on it. But recession
coming out, feel better. My dad sees the receipts, and if he gets charged for two coffees, he's like, hey,
yeah,
take this $1.28 coffee off.
Exactly. What that's what it is. Is that detail that's going to ensure that. Now, again, there's ways to do it smartly, and you do have to take some risk, because if you're risk adverse all the time, it's not going to work either. But you have to take smart risk, just like we talked about. And that, like, for example, over the next few years, we already know there's a housing deficit. We have more people, millennials, now Gen Z, they're going to be getting into houses, and we don't have enough. So rentals are going to go up and houses. I mean, it's only inevitable. And that's what I see. People need a place to live. So over the past couple of years, and even with our project, we're going into, I mean, we have a location right across from an elementary school and a middle school. So we're trying to build homes more for families versus, you know, the single, you know, entrepreneur kind of person. And you've got to know your market and what you're building.
Shelton, to Nee's point earlier about being able to pivot, like right now is a good time, I'm finding, to actually negotiate prices down. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at the delta that you're paying more on the percentage rate, you're actually able to get that or a little bit more down on the purchase price because there's not a lot of activity. And then you could, if you're holding it long term, when rates do go down, which they're thinking second quarter of next year, that they'll be down a little bit more than where they are today, you can always just refi. And now you got a good price, and then you get your good rate later. So it's kind of to Nee's point earlier about knowing how to pivot with the current market and the current market conditions.
Yeah, and I'm trying to balance a little bit of, so I have two short-term rentals in Florida. I'm trying to balance a little bit of, I want to make sure I have that like padding for whatever reason, if people stop traveling, but also I don't want to be so risk averse that I'm like missing out. You know what I mean? Like the balance of like, hey, I got to have my emergency fund, but I also want to invest when it comes around. Cause I'm on that fixed in, I'm in government work. So the income rise capability is fixed.
Any other questions or comments for Monica?
Yeah, so one more question I had was, you spoke about the LLC and, you know, how you do deals through that. I'm just wondering, is that another like kind of good way to, you know, have capital for deals and to, you know, I guess basically gain more leverage? Just be able to gain more leverage, right? Because I think one issue that I'm going to run into is that I won't, you know, for my next deal, I don't necessarily know right now where the cash is going to come from. I know it's going to happen. I just don't know where the cash right now is going to come from. But I'm wondering, you know, is that a possible route for me to, you know, strike up a, I don't know, 20 to 25K loan, if that's something I could do. And then, you know, use that to purchase a property and try to pay that back with the income. I just want to hear your thoughts on that.
I honestly don't know with that one and what you can do. I don't know if of the legalities of being able to do that. I mean, you can always get equity out of the home that you're having, you know, and look at that. That's something that we've looked at personally just with our home. And that's why we actually, and we talked about interest rates, right? So I got I think a 7.1% or something interest rate that I'm refinancing because I did rehab a property that is our short-term rental property that we have, purchased it for 175, put about 60,000 in it. And I mean, it's not a great, so it's not a flip property, right? It's more for short-term rental. We should be able to refinance for like a 285. So yeah, we still, because we did put 20% down, we're able to pull that money out and now put it back into other things. So that's generally what you can do, the easiest way than loans or whatever. I mean, heck, at the end of the day, if you have a credit card limit for $30,000, you could probably pull out money, but you've got to show that with the bank, they're not going to ask you about that, right? But I've done that when I first started out too. I've had to take some of that credit card. I have, you know, a lot of times I'll increase your limits. I'm not saying live on that kind of road, okay? But if it's for a smart investment where you know you can put it in and then be able to get it back out and pay it off, then you know that's a creative way to do it.
And just to touch on that too, right? Are you pulling cash out of the credit card? Or are you using the credit card like as a down payment or like
to, you can't use like, it as a down mortgage? Payment.
Right, that's what I was thinking.
They give you those checks where it's a certain percentage that you get for many months, and yes, they charge you a fee. So you've got to know all your costs. I'm not saying that's the way to do it. Okay, I'm not good ideas, but if you need creative ways, that there's creative ways.
Sure, cool.
And to that point, piggybacking off of that a little bit, when you look at, I think we talked about this last week, right, with Adam, but when you look at HELOCs and credit cards, things of that nature, I look at those as awesome for something short term. Like what Monica's doing with that short term rental house. Yeah, if you need to use a HELOC, credit card, et cetera, you know you're going to be refinancing that in 6 months. So use that, go and get it fixed, updated, refinance, pull that money back out, pay those off, and now you're into a long-term solid debt situation, right? But when you look at trying to buy the next house, I just want to say this clearly for everybody, right? There's nothing wrong with building your capital back up and taking a few months, even a little bit closer to a year, things of that nature, to build that capital back up. The first house I purchased was December of 2016. The next one that I purchased, it may be toward the end of 2017 or very early 2018. Not that I wasn't looking, but I need to build the capital back up, had to get right and be able to go out there and purchase another. So I would recommend that, especially when you're early on, just build that capital back up. And don't be afraid to wait a little bit unless there's a major opportunity where you know you're going to be able to pull that money back out if you're going to use one of those credit means. Or if you're going to partner with somebody, that's a little different, right? Because you have experience, if you're going to bring somebody else in that can help with some of the down payment, I would look to that before I tried to max out a credit card to put a down payment on a house. Because if you're buying that house and there's not a rehab involved with it, how do you then get the money back to pay off the card? It would be a little difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And I'd also tap on, Desmond, how familiar are you with LLCs?
I consider myself a novice, honestly.
Okay. I guess the only thing I'd consider too is like, if you start an LLC, it doesn't just all of a sudden like hide your debt to income from a lender. So it's kind of like, depending on the lender you work with, like if you personally try to go get a loan, they're like, all right, your debt to income's too high, we can't loan to you. You can't then just like try to run it through the LLC. Because there's like a little bit of seasoning with the LLC based on how you do your taxes and stuff like that. And then your relationship with the bank, like a good lender, like he's got Ricardo, he was able to work with me and you kind of come up with a game plan on how to like kind of get around that so they can make it through underwriting. Just
gotcha. That up. Yeah, good to know. Thank you.
Yeah. And that's where it helps with the local banks, like we're talking about too. They have a little different. It's not as stringent as an underwriting with a mortgage lender, for example. Again, my husband's a mortgage lender and we'll use him for your basic, you know, home buying. But when it's for an investment or a flip, a local bank is sometimes the interest rates, yeah, it's a little bit higher, maybe 0.5% higher, but the leverage that you get from them is a little bit better. And you're not getting scrutinized with every little send me 500 documents to prove that you have the money, you know?
I know that very well. That's what it was like. I was buying a lot of documents.
Yeah, it's almost honestly like the one I'm buying, closing on next week. And again, I know my numbers. I know the rent, but I just pretty much sent them the contract and sent an updated personal financial statement. And that's the next thing you know, the appraiser's calling me and then I'm closing. I don't have to send them anything else.
But that is gold.
But it's like Shelton was saying, though, I do put my taxes in and Dunlap Properties honestly loses money every year. Okay. It loses money because I put a lot of money into investments. So it loses money, meaning I am rehabbing properties. Okay. So on paper, it loses money. In reality, I'm gaining net worth, right? So it helps counteract my other LLC, which is taxes and S Corp because I have employees. I can get all into that too, but totally about houses, makes money. And that's where it offsets each other, having two different corporate, you know, LLCs. You know, and if honestly, and the thing too, I know it's scary and Shelton, I know you said you're a government and you're the W-2 employee. It's scary going from a W-2 to 1099, but also with 1099, you get to control your income. It also can be the other way where, hey, you can fall flat on your face. But I know I always have the comfort in knowing if I ever didn't make it in real estate, I could go back to Cracker Barrel any day I wanted to. And they would hire me in a heartbeat. So, I mean, that's my security. Do I want to do that? Heck no. I have nightmares about that stuff. So I just had the motivation to make sure that I continue to make money no matter what situation.
Oh, I want to be off the W-2. I just have I have a contract for 5 years, so I'm stuck for at least that much longer.
No, love it. Love the conversation. Desmond's having a 5-course meal while we're having this conversation, but we're not going to get into that. Any other questions or comments for Monica? Monica, I just want to say again, thank you so much for joining the Financial Freedom Mastermind Group. We are going to let you get back to those beautiful children, and we really appreciate just all the knowledge and your story and the motivation. I can tell you in front of the audience, and I tell you this personally as well, you truly motivate me. And I'm happy that you're taking this first step with the brokerage because I'm going to copy and paste, right? So with the Agave Home team, I'm going to, you know, just like always, right? I'm going to ask for tips and kind of take documents, but I appreciate you.
You know, we call that knee, not copy and paste. It's called R&D, rip off and duplicate. Rip off and
duplicate. There you go. Hey, come on now.
And it's okay to do that. It's okay to take other success and, you know, make it into your own.
Absolutely. No, we appreciate you, Monica. Hope you have a good night. Everybody else, have an awesome night. We'll see you next week.
Please, happy to, you know, reach out to me anytime. I'm here and happy to help. If you want to learn about farm properties, I can teach you about farm properties too. So,
absolutely. And really quick, Monica, can you give just contact information if people want to reach out to you?
Yep. I mean, the best thing is my email is monica@totallyabouthouses. So just like it's spelled, totallyabouthouses.com. So anytime I can, you know, ask me any questions, I'm happy to help.
Done and done. With that, I wish everyone a good night and we will see you next week.
Thank you, Nee.
This is going to be the largest transfer of market share we've ever seen between agents in history.
KGCI Real Estate On Air, keeping you informed and empowered as the NAR settlement brings seismic shifts to the real estate industry.
You treat your buyers just like you do a seller. You get a consultation, you pitch, and you compete for the value you will deliver for the fee you're willing to accept.
Stay informed, stay prepared. Depend on KGCI Real Estate On Air.